Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. I just want to say thank you at the beginning for following me on Instagram over at Owning It Podcast, where I've created a new page where I will hopefully be able to share lots of helpful ancillary content to the podcast, like tips, clips, different explainers and topics and discussions around upcoming episodes. So do join me over there if you are on social media. My guest this week, I have just recorded with her. Her name is Nav Sohanpal. She's a mindset coach. She's just an incredible woman. Having been raised in a Sikh community with a Sikh background, but living in Windsor, Nav shares with me her really inspiring story about living one way when you're meant to be living another way. So the expectations of her community, the perception, the outward measures of success that were placed upon her that just did not align with how she felt or what she believed or what she needed in her life, and how incredibly tough that was, and the anxiety that had to manifest and had to come to the fore in order to get her onto the path that she needed to be on. So she shares her story of that, and now these days she's working as a mindset coach. I will include the links in the podcast description in the episode notes to follow Nav and connect with her if that's what you want to do. I really hope you find this helpful. I think it's particularly relevant for people who are struggling with anxiety and really finding it hard to articulate that to their family or their friends or anyone in their life who doesn't quite understand, and that can be another layer of anxiety on top of what you're already dealing with, and it can be such a source of stress. So do enjoy this episode, and thank you as always for tuning in. Nav, thank you so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast. Your story to me is fascinating, so inspiring. You've been through a lot and you really did experience the full weight of anxiety for a period of time in your mid-20s, right around the time that it all came to a head for me as well. So I want to hear your story and then your background. And then I want to get to the part where now you're a really successful mindset coach, helping women in particular navigate their careers. And you've really turned everything around so much that I don't doubt that this will be really encouraging for people listening. So let's go back to the very beginning, shall we? Can you give me some insight into your upbringing in the Sikh community?
Sure. Yep. So I was brought up in Windsor here with my parents and also my two older sisters. So I'm the youngest of three girls. There's actually a little bit of an age gap between us, which became a very influential factor, I think, in just my development as well, and just kind of seeing how they were evolving as women. So I think something that's just really important to know is that for as long as I can remember, especially coming from a South Asian background, something that was really embedded just into my way of thinking was essentially just a list of to-dos and don'ts. There was almost like this guide on what really made up, especially as a woman, what made up a really respectful woman. And this concept of respect was just really, really vital and important in our community, and it still is to this day. A lot of what we do, you know, everything that we do just within the South Asian community is based on respect. So we were brought up from a very young age with things, you know, that were looked as more admirable qualities and then the things that you probably, you know, should deter from. So a lot of things will almost, you know, you're almost living within these parameters, if that makes sense, of just kind of like what's acceptable and what's not.
So you're living within these parameters, but you're in Windsor where the rest of the world around you isn't living within these parameters.
Exactly. I definitely had this exposure to two different cultures. There was a culture that I had at home. This is a culture where from a young age, you're just taught, you know, you don't talk back to certain people. You don't challenge elders. A really big thing is, you know when to stay quiet. That's a really, really big one.
And as women, you're already facing the pressure to stay quiet in society.
Exactly. And it was definitely more targeted to women as well, you know, knowing when to stay quiet, let the man speak. Also just things like, embracing your culture, your religion. A huge thing is around education. That's high, you know, valued very, very highly in our community. There's been some progress like in that area already, but definitely when I was growing up, it was very much the traditional vocational route was what was very much advocated.
So not a blogger then?
No. Definitely, I will definitely get into this now because, you know, I'll get into that later, sorry, because obviously making that change, like I've done a 180. So I think it was just definitely, you know, a shock to a lot of people around me. But yeah, growing up, something that I look back at now and I realize is that a lot of that time where you can, you know, just experiment, be curious, a lot of that was capped. We didn't have that growing up. And I realized just how important that is, especially as a young woman, when it comes to just forming and establishing your identity, right? Because a lot of that was already ascribed for me. It was already done for me. Like I knew I've got to go, you know, I've got to kind of study a certain subject. I've got to go into a certain field. And then it's, you know, even just with your life partner, just making sure that you're bringing back someone that is kind of like considered on the same level and comes from a reputable family. And all of this comes down to perception. It's a huge, huge thing. It's all about how we're being perceived to others in the community, knowing that we're upholding our name in society as well. And that's a really big thing. And something that I probably say this on a daily basis, but women especially feel this need to uphold their family's name and honor in society on a much larger scale than men. So as a result, you know, we don't take certain risks. You know, we just stay very much within the lines.
Do you remember being okay with that to a certain point? Like, were you happy to go along with the do's and don'ts that were expected of you in your community?
So this is the thing. I don't think I ever have been. I just knew I had to do it, which is like, I always think, you know, how come I've kind of gone on this different trajectory compared to my sisters? I think it is because I have never been okay with it from a young age. Like, I absolutely adore my culture. I'm so proud to kind of come from the community that I come from. There's so many things, you know, like there's so many different ways that it's just shaped me into who I am. But there are certain things where I just think we need to evolve and just have greater awareness around certain topics. But no, I don't think I was. Like I always knew from a young age, like I was someone that's actually very creative. I was really into the arts. So I was that kid that had like a different hobby, like every single day after school. I was part of the drama club. I did kickboxing, singing, violin. So I was very much into all that, but I kind of always knew at the back of my mind this is never going to flow into my career.
It's just a bit of a hobby on the side as a kid.
Exactly.
And so you're living in this permanent state of conflict then yourself, where you're being curious about what you're seeing in Western culture, being able to be creative and experiment and try different things and consider different options, but you're in a household and growing up in the background that's really wants you to go down one path. Yeah. How early, or do you remember at that time, even as a teenager, that kind of tension that you're living with has to create some sort of anxiety? Do you remember feeling anxious at that time, long before it all really came crashing down on you?
I'd probably say the first time I really felt it was when I was 18, because that was when you're making a really big decision. And that is, you're ultimately choosing, right, what is it I'm going to study? I'm going to go to university. And so for me, I didn't have that much autonomy in what I was going to do. Even with the subjects I was studying at school, a lot of them already, you know, I was told, okay, right, basically have these as your staples and just choose kind of like whatever else you want. But you need to have certain subjects because that's what they believed was going to open up so many doors for me and just allow me to be really successful. So when it came to this point where, you know, slowly, slowly your options have just become more and more narrow.
Yeah. And you see your whole life stretching out in front of you.
Exactly. So then when it came to it, I couldn't choose what I wanted to do because there was no way that I could prove to everyone around me, okay, if I take this route that's a little bit off track from what we're used to, I couldn't provide that 100% guarantee if I'm going to be successful. To everyone else, it just didn't resonate. They needed that thing, which was just like, look, everyone else has done this. We get compared a lot, which is a really big thing. There's a lot of comparisons being made to other people. Always just putting what other people are going to think right at the forefront of my mind, rather than just connecting with what it is that I wanted to do. So it's probably when I was 18 years old and I had to make a decision about what am I going to study.
And how did it feel? How did the anxiety kind of let you know that it was there bubbling under the surface?
It was this thing where I started to shut myself away. That's what it was. It was probably more physical, mm-hmm. where I just kind of isolated myself a lot. And then when I actually, because I ended up studying law, I went to Portsmouth University. So I was a little bit far away, but not too far. And that is when it really came to a head. So that's when things like my eating, that was a really big thing that got impacted. I wouldn't know if I would say that it was like, just because I never got it like medically confirmed, but I started doing a lot of like restrictive eating, if that makes sense. I became really obsessive with fitness, because when I was exercising and I just was blasting out my music, it just helped me to shut away from everything else. It was my one space where I could just be.
You were taking control in areas that you had the power to take control of, with what you eat and how you move your body, when so many other elements of your life were kind of out of your hands. So that's probably exactly a coping mechanism.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it was. In a space where I was just like, everything else is kind of being dictated for me, this was the one thing which I just had complete control of, you know, and it took me down this path, which was just, again, very isolating. The thing is that I've always been able to keep up appearances. This is something that I've just been conditioned and taught from a young age. So no one really saw what was going on. No one was able to pick up on it. And, you know, I kind of just went through the motions. I made it through the 3 years. I did a master's afterwards, and I was just going through, because what started to happen was that as I started to just kind of tick off these boxes, this weird balance shift comes where you're also starting to get this praise from those around you. So as I'm starting to see, you know, those around me, just like extended members of family, they're being like, oh, you know, she's doing so well. I mean, her parents must be so proud. I got myself this great job. I was in a relationship with someone that kind of came from very similar backgrounds, and it was very reputable. So it looked like I was just ticking things off, and I was just kind of heading off in this right way. So as you're starting to do that, you also start to get this high. And I talk about this a lot, this high that comes with acceptance. Like, acceptance is so praised, and you start realizing, oh yeah, you know, like I am doing really well. Like, I am doing good. And it helps you just to push down all that I was feeling inside, because I was just surviving off of this fuel that I was getting from the acceptance. And then what that started to do was that it just fueled me to just keep working and working and working harder in every single element of my life. And then that's literally where everything blew up.
How did it blow up? How did it manifest? And do you remember a point when everything physically, your body just said, like, we can't do this anymore?
Yep. So I remember it so clearly. So it was one evening. So I was working in London. You know, it was a normally working quite long hours. So it was probably around 8:30 in the evening. And I'm sat there at my desk, and I just remember feeling, I'm really aware of my heart rate. And this is such a weird thing, because something that's like, that's something I never, ever paid attention to. And I was just like, whoa, like, it's getting faster and faster. So thinking, okay, maybe I'm just feeling warm or whatever. You know, maybe I just need to get some fresh air. So I'm just walking around the office, because we were quite high up. So it's going to take me a little while just to get outside. And in the space of 30 seconds, my breathing was impacted. I felt like I was struggling to catch my breath. I was so warm. I was like sweating. And it was this, in my mind, it was, oh my God, something bad's going to happen to me. Something bad is happening right now. And it's, everything just started to slow down. And I remember running to the ladies, and I was just there looking at myself in the mirror. And I was like, you look fine. You look fine. It was all on the inside that I was feeling a certain way. And I just shut myself into the cubicle. And then I was like, okay, this just isn't getting any better, because I was very conscious of anyone else, because lots of people working, you know, till late. So I knew people were going to be coming into the bathroom. And I was like, oh my God, I can't let anyone see me. And this is such a big thing that remained with me. I can't let anyone see me. I can't let anyone see what's happening. But luckily, so I was like, right, this is just getting worse. I need to go outside, because I just feel like I'm going to faint. That's what the feeling was. And luckily I remember this because I had one friend in there that I was really, really close to. And I go to him, can you feel my heart? I literally, that's how scared I was. Can you feel my heart? And he's like, yeah, it's quick. It is really fast. And I was like, okay, I just need to get outside. And honestly, it was just getting worse and worse. I barely made it outside. And when I did, I didn't even care about finding anywhere to sit. I remember just sitting on the floor. So I was just sat on the floor outside and waiting. You know, this is a really, really buzzing street. There's lots of bars, there's restaurants. So everyone is just there, kind of just getting on with their evening. And I was just sat there and I was struggling to breathe. That's all I remember. I can't catch my breath. I feel so scared. I'm so alone. I don't know what's going on. And you start thinking worst case scenario because I had no idea what this was. And it took me a good 30 minutes before I felt like, okay, I think whatever that is has passed. And I was so drained.
At what point or how long was it before you were like, I think I know what this is, but I can only imagine for you, the fear of admitting that vulnerability was just through the roof.
Yeah. So this is something that's really important to know is that growing up, we did not speak about mental health. When this first happened, I was just like, okay, I don't know what that was, but it's just gone. And it came back again 2 days later. And then it started happening every day. And I didn't know what it was because when you start Googling, which I'm just like to anyone that's listening, try your hardest not to do it because it just, the symptoms are so kind of like they overlap with so many other different things. So I was really just like, maybe because I'm asthmatic. So I was like, maybe it's that. I don't know what it is, but it's not until they were happening every single day for a good, I would say, 6 months.
Wow, you lived through that for 6 months every day with that level of panic. That is so tough.
6 months, and I called up, and it was only because I remember being at the printing area and I was printing something and I saw this thing and it was just like, are you feeling a certain way? And I was resonating with this flyer, and then it was just like, call up this mental health hotline. And there was so much resistance because I was like, this isn't a mental health thing. Like, I don't have anything with this, because again, these are the topics that have a massive stigma attached to them within our culture. And you have this thing of just being like, I don't want to be associated with this, right? Because if I'm associated with this, I'm then not fulfilling and upholding this image. And it's going to really have a knock-on impact on my respectability. So there was that going on. And it's so, when I look back, I'm just like, oh my God, you wouldn't have had to go through half the stuff that you did if you just accepted it for what it was.
But how could you? I mean, you've grown up not having any awareness of it, and also the price you'd have to pay for asking for help or admitting it. Like, what started as anxiety about going down a path that wasn't serving you well suddenly becomes this monster of like, well, I can't even admit this to myself, let alone anyone in my family, because it's drilled into you to be so focused on perception and never letting the side down, never letting any perceived weakness come to the fore. So that gives anxiety a whole other set of arms and legs to run riot with you.
100%. That's exactly what it was. And it actually took me a couple of appointments with different doctors, because when they first said, you know, we think you're having panic attacks, you've got an anxiety disorder. Again, which I was just like, oh, like, I just don't like that word being used, because it just makes you feel like there's something wrong with you, and it isn't.
No, it makes you feel like you're going to be stuck that way forever. And like, this is just something fundamentally in your brain that's gone wrong. Whereas I think from what you're saying, for you, it was very much a case of circumstance and environment and all these different things that were giving your body this sense of threat, and not that there was anything wrong with you at all.
There isn't, you know, when you're going through these things, like with mental health, like it's such a common thing to say, but you know, if you had a broken arm, you wouldn't just leave it. Do you know what I mean? And it doesn't mean that you're now considered and looked at differently. You aren't. It's the same thing with your mental health, exactly the same thing. It's just because it's not tangible and you can't necessarily explain it.
And you feel like your mental health is you, because you are your mind, like you are your mental health.
Yeah, it can take over. When that is out of balance and out of sync, it completely takes over everything, because of course, you know, like, you are as only good as your mindset. And that's something that I didn't realize until I went on this whole journey. I thought, I completely looked at it as something separate. I was like, there's me, and then there's whatever this is. So it's when I started to understand, no, this is all part of the same thing. This is part of me. It's very much within me. That's when I kind of started to make peace with it. But it took me a good 6 months and different doctors. It was so interesting. I didn't believe them. I was like, no, I think they're just being really generic about this. Maybe I'm just ticking off certain, like, you know, certain things I'm saying, I was ticking off certain certain requirements for a condition or something. And that's literally how it was for me. And it's only when they were just, when it started getting worse and worse, when I was having multiple a day, that's when I really was like, because what would be happening is I could be sat at my desk and then I would feel this sense and I knew it was coming. So then I would just make my way downstairs. I'd go to this park opposite and I would sit there for 40 minutes just having a panic attack.
Oh my God.
And then I'd come back to my desk and I would just act like everything was fine. So I'd be like cracking jokes. I'd be doing my work. I'd carry on to the evening. Then I'd do my commute home, which was just like over an hour. And it's just, it was such a, it was not sustainable. And that's what I started to realize. The thing is, the problem is when there's a bit of that high performing anxiety going on. So when it wasn't impacting everything else, there was no need for me to respond. And that's what it was. It's only when stuff really started to flow in. So when I started to realize it was happening when I was out and about with friends. And the scariest one was when it was happening when I was exercising, because again, the exercise was still a very core part of my release. So it was still happening, you know? And I remember, because swimming was something that I really just loved doing. And I remember when I was swimming and I started having a panic attack and it just kept happening in every different element of my life. And that's when I started to understand, no, this is something that is not going away anytime soon.
What do you think the anxiety was trying to communicate with you? Because it's always trying to send you a message of some kind.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Yeah, it was telling me the way that you're living is not aligned with who you are. Like, that's what it was. I always had this thing, like I knew who I was, I kind of knew the things that I was into. I knew what my own definition of like happiness and success all looked like, but it got, you know, completely displaced by something else. And that's what the anxiety was telling me. It was telling me this is not sustainable.
Yeah. So you've gone to a few different doctors. It's gotten to the point where it's several times a day. It's happening in social situations. At that point, had you broached the subject with your family?
So whenever I used to, because obviously the panic attacks were happening when I was at home, and what I used to do was I would just go to my room. The one thing that really started happening was my emotions were really heightened, and that's something I'd never experienced before. We were taught very much, you know, with emotions and stuff, you kind of just deal with that privately. You don't let it be shown. And that's exactly what I did. So when I was at home, I remember there was one evening where it was just so bad because I just couldn't control the anxiety. And I was crying. And I was sat on the floor by my bed, and my elder sister, who was over at the time, she came in, and I wasn't expecting her to be awake, but she came in and she saw me and she was just like, what is going on? And I was trying to explain it to her, you know, I have these certain moments in my day where I just start feeling really overwhelmed. I feel like something bad's going to happen to me, you know, and I was trying to explain it to her and she just consoled me, which sometimes is all you need. It's the biggest thing, you know, like I think something's really important is we can't be looking at other people to try and make us like, you know, sometimes we look at other people to make us feel better. And it's not that, it's like, I just needed someone to listen. It was the first time just kind of like getting that off my chest.
That's a big moment to be able to share that with someone.
Huge, huge. Especially with someone in the family as well, that then knows what you're going through, because it felt like my secret. I felt like I had this other thing that was going on. That was like this weakness, and it was like my dirty secret. That's what I always say. That's what it was. And it was so, it felt, you know, I was very vulnerable, like kind of just sharing that. But I felt so supported that she just knew.
How did your parents respond?
So I was obviously like, don't tell anyone. But it was only when I had to go for my first CBT appointment, because that's what I was recommended. And it was about an hour away from where I live. And my mom was obviously, I needed the support. That's how I realized. I was like, you know what? I thought I could do this on my own, but I can't. Like, I need someone here with me, just supporting me in that. Because, you know, just therapy as well, there's a massive, again, just it's such an unknown space. And I remember just saying to my mom, I tried to be really blasé about it. I was just like, hey, mom, you know, I'm just going to be going to this place. Do you want to come with me? Like, I'm going to have like therapy. And I was just like, yeah, you know, I've just been feeling a little bit stressed. And I was trying to basically control and minimize the response because I didn't want her to worry. But obviously she was just like, hold up. Like, what's going on? What do you mean? And then that's when we started having that conversation. And I could tell she was so shaken up. She was really sad. And I just felt, again, you know, you're just like, I've put that on my mom. So you just feel really bad.
Oh, no.
And if I'm being really honest, I don't think my dad knew until a good, this is going to really shock you. So he didn't know until, so this started in 2016. He didn't know until 2018. Wow. Because that's when I got signed off from work.
Oh my God, this is going on years then.
Yeah. Because it never impacted. Like, I was always able to bounce back. I was always able to cover it.
Were you afraid of what your dad would think?
I think I was more afraid because I couldn't communicate it properly, because I didn't have that awareness. That awareness only came after I got signed off, and I had to really just confront what was going on, and I had to build up that awareness around it. I was massively afraid because he's a very, very strong character. And I was just like, am I going to be punished for this? That's literally what it was. Am I going to be seen as that disappointment?
Not only that, but also the reality is the anxiety is coming to you because you can't keep going on the path you're going. So there's the judgment for feeling this vulnerability at the moment, but then there's, I can't continue on the path I was on. So you're going to have to be okay with that.
Exactly. This is where I got my confidence from, which I was lacking for so long, is because when I realized I got to this point where I was like, it's only me that can really help myself. There's no one else around me. That's where my confidence came from, just being like, you know what? I really can't care too much about what everyone else is saying, about what everyone else is thinking, because if I get swept up in that, I'm only going to get worse. So naturally, the environment at home also became a little bit provoking as well for my anxiety, because there was a lot of tension. There's a lot of, because, so when I did get signed off first, it was just like, you know, maybe you just need a little bit of a break. You know, you have been working really hard. And I knew deep down, this is not something, because I initially got signed up for like 4 weeks and I was like,
you're not going to be back in 4 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was the same. It was like, oh, just take the long weekend. And I was like, okay, I don't think this is going to be the thing that makes it all better.
Exactly. Yeah. It was just like, you know, maybe you just need to kind of like spend more time with your friends. You just need to like relax.
No, you're like, I've completely shut down. Like, I cannot function. I cannot put one foot in front of the other.
100%. I think they knew. So I'll tell you this moment that I always remember, which was that I got signed off, and the next day, so, you know, everything is just completely gone. Your routine, everything is broken away, right? Because you're just like, what's going on? And I remember going into the shower, just a context. So leading up to this, what had happened was I was commuting into work and I was just so anxious. I couldn't get rid of this anxious feeling. And then I got into the lift to go up. And in this lift, I felt like I couldn't breathe. I was like, there's no oxygen. And this lift was pretty full. And I was like, something's happening. I literally feel like all the air has been sucked out of this environment. And I was going to be going up to like level 5, I think it was. And I got to level 1 and I had to press. And I literally remember just falling out the lift and I was on all fours. That is literally what happened. And everyone was around me. And I was like, That was the breaking point. I was on all fours, like literally by like, you know, like the reception area.
Yeah.
And that's where I was. And then I remember calling my sister and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this. And then I had someone come pick me up from like London, went home. We just had to, you know, everyone was like, you just need to rest for that day. And then it's when I had that appointment, she was just like, no, like you've literally had a breakdown.
Because you weren't taking the earlier signs of anxiety probably seriously enough. You found a way to live with them and have them there, but still be really high functioning and still tick all the boxes. And then the anxiety was like, hold on, you're not paying attention. Like, we need to crank this up several notches. And it had to make you break down to stop.
That's what it is. And that's why I always say, do not think that just because it's something that you can hush down for a second, it's not. It's silently still going to work. And then it's going to blow up until the point that you listen. And that's what happened. I had to get to the worst case scenario.
You mentioned in your email that your family at this point were getting like increasingly frustrated and just kind of wanting you to just sort of like snap out of it. Was that around this time?
So this probably happened after a couple of months when they saw, because they just thought, okay, well, this initial period of 1 month, you know, that's it, she'll be back to it and everything will be good. And when it wasn't happening and I kept going back, you know, and getting that form, which was just like, nope, you are not fit to work still. So it's probably around the 2 month mark, because at this point, so something that was really important was that I could not be left alone. So I was struggling, like literally even to have a shower, I needed someone near me. I needed to have my mom near me. She needed to be there while I was getting changed, because I was just like, please don't go away. I struggled to go upstairs. So it's like, once I was downstairs, that's where I was. That was it. The thought of going upstairs, I was like, my heart rate's going to go up. I'm going to get anxious. I'm too far away from everyone. That's literally how it was. I couldn't cook. I couldn't cook my own meals. And it was just everything was so heightened. I couldn't drive anywhere. I couldn't be around other people. So it was a really just, you were isolated from everything else. So they're seeing this and they are seeing me just transform. And in their eyes, they're seeing me go backwards. And they're just like, what is going on? Like, what has happened? Because for them, it's very much, you've gone from this to this, wherever I myself have experienced the gradual breakdown. So for them, it was just like, what is going on?
And of course, that's just going to completely perpetuate the anxiety. If you feel like everyone's looking at you like you have two heads, or that there's pressure on you to be better by tomorrow, that is, of course, going, that's a threat to your mind and body as well. So you're just like, oh God, we need to be extra vigilant. It keeps you stuck on this loop of anxiety. You weren't going to get anywhere. I'm so interested to hear about how you eventually broke through this, because it is so a phenomenal amount of pressure for one person to be under in a really tough environment. And of course, I mean, I don't want this to sound disparaging towards your family. They love you. That's the community you grew up in. There's like less focus on mental health and they want the absolute best for you. But it's still, the pressure cooker was just a lot.
Because even when I was at bottom, rock bottom, I still had to try and show. So I still was showing, no, I'm good. And I was still trying to be like, I was still trying to be reassuring, if that makes sense. I was trying to reassure everyone else. Whereas I knew, oh my God, I never thought I was going to be at this place. And I would just sit there. I remember I would just sit there on the sofa. I was too scared to go out. I was scared to do anything. But yeah, you know, there was definitely comments being made, because when something like this is something that they don't understand, they tend to reject it. And they try to just use their own life experiences and they jump to their own assumptions and they use that to then for it to make sense. So for them, it was just like, oh, maybe you just can't handle, you know, like, you can't handle what's going on. Like, the corporate world, maybe it's too much. There was definitely, you know, references being made to being weak. Oh. Maybe you're just too sensitive. Is it attention seeking? You're making up, right? And I know that, you know, that this is not in any ways me saying this to put down my family.
No,
because we have now, like, it's amazing that the journey that we just went through, but I'm saying it more because I know that other people are hearing this.
Yes.
And I need them to know, like, you cannot digest that.
And it's not on you to try and change their perception or educate them on mental health. You really, it's an impossible situation, but you really have to try and separate yourself from other people's judgments. But it's, when you're already that worn down, that emotionally drained, it's impossible. I'm in so much awe of you that you're sitting here today telling me this story.
I still sometimes I'm like, oh my God, have I come out of that? Like, I have to remind myself, like, I came out of that, because it did take so long. It took a good couple of years to really come out of that.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So when did things start to feel like, okay, I know that this is anxiety, I know this is what I'm dealing with, and I really need to confront now the various lifestyle factors that have brought me here, and what changes am I going to make?
It's when I started accepting what was happening, because for so long I was still just like, this is something separate, this is whatever, it's going to do its own thing. It's when I realized this is on me, because when I was having anxiety, I was just literally just like, I was letting it just consume me. And then I was just like, I was thinking, okay, this happens, and then that's it, you just carry on. And it was just like, no, like, you are so much more empowered in this. So naturally I started doing a lot of research around anxiety, about panic attacks, just educating myself. I was just like, whatever it is that I think can just give me that glimmer of hope that they're going to help me, I was trying it all. So I did a lot of that from home, which was naturally just starting helping me just to think in a different way. And then I was starting to have like in-person sessions as well. So it was definitely more just when I opened myself up to this whole space of mental health and well-being and mindset and understanding like how serious it is and how powerful it is.
But it's such a, it's a very slow process and you need such patience with yourself. Like people message me all the time being like, what's the one thing I can do now? I'm like, it's unfortunately when you get to the point, like look how long it took you to get to that point where you're on all fours. Yeah. It's going to take time to unwind all of that anxiety as well. And there's not, you're not just going to walk, like say, oh, I get it now. I'm going to walk out of the house and go night clubbing. Unfortunately, your body is in a state of hyper vigilance, which people find like a really hard pill to swallow.
It is. And you know, when you hear these things, like obviously what I was really getting brought into was, you know, we just do six sessions and that's it. So you're like, okay, great. And then it's like, okay, I'm into my like 30th session, right? And you're just like, okay.
That's what inspired me to write my book in the first place, was because there was so much out there that was saying the pill that would fix it all or unlock the secret to anxiety, or look at me, I used to have panic attacks every day and then I did this and I've never had them again, and just enter your bank details. I did loads of treatments as well, being told like literally one session is all it takes and we're going to undo this. And I was like, oh my God, amazing. And I would walk into it being like, this is brilliant. I'd walk out of it believing that it had worked. And then later on in the middle of the night, when I would be lying with my eyes open, being like, oh my God, it's still there. That shit is so detrimental and so dangerous.
It is. And also what it does is like, essentially what I realized I was doing was I was giving my power to these people. So what I started doing was I was like blaming it on them. And I was like, no way, they owed me this. They said they were going to do this. And you get so caught up in this thing of I've just put my power into their hands that then you don't take that power back. So that's what a huge part of this was really taking that journey into my own hands. And something that I think is so important to mention is that I got so lucky. Like, honestly, I think about it so often. I got so lucky with a doctor that I saw. She was also a Sikh woman. And I was just, I was like, oh my God, when I went in, I was like, she's going to say all sorts. She's going to say so many different things. But she was one of the most amazing factors in why I got better as well. Because I come from a family that's very like in the healthcare space. So there's a lot of people in the medical field. So naturally what I was being told was, you know, I think if you try the medication, I think it will get you better. And she was there and she literally was just like, if you want to do this, just basically know that you're numbing yourself and maybe you need to learn the coping mechanisms. So she was all for it. And I had situations where literally my family were like getting in touch with her to be like, you need to tell her to go on the medicines. It's going to make her feel better. And she never did any of that. Like she literally was just like, this is your own thing that you need to figure out. Because if you don't come back from this, and if you don't fully know how to adopt coping mechanisms that are going to keep you in check, if this ever happens again, it's going to be 200 times worse. So she was such an important factor. So I always was like, I'm going to do this the natural way. I think I know I need to lean in, because for so many years I just haven't. And the time has come to do that. And so what it was that I literally started doing was that I just had to take a look at every single thing, how I'd been raised, what were the values that were embedded in me. And then where I, like, so I had what I was brought up with and what was ascribed to me, but then what I genuinely believed. And that's what I had to connect with, was what do I believe? What do I want for myself? How do I want to feel? What is it that I prioritize? Do I prioritize, you know, really just trying to kill it in this corporate space, and the way that I was living was like neglecting my family, my friends, my social life, all this kind of stuff. And I had to go through all of that, and I had to understand where was it that I wanted to be and how was I going to bridge that gap. So it was undoing a lot of these limiting habits. That's what it was. A lot of the way I was acting was just habitual. I wasn't really questioning a lot of the things. It was just moving through the motions. So now it's becoming so incredibly aware every single day and creating that space to think before I'm doing something and before I'm committing to something. So that's what this journey basically became about. It was looking at every single thing and just understanding what wasn't in alignment with who I really was. That's such a big part of it, because I didn't know who I was. I knew who I was expected to be, but who was I? And I know that sounds like it's such a big statement, but it really was just rediscovering myself again.
And when you felt empowered enough to say, actually, I know what I want to do, and I know that this fits, all of what you had in your mind serves you better, then you have to go and explain that to your family, who are going to have to accept that you're not going to just slop right back into the perfect Sikh woman. So how did they react then? How did things improve with your family now?
Yeah, so do you know what? When you build up this solid mindset of I know why I'm doing something, it became so much more easier for me to communicate that to everyone else. So actually that part was on my end way more easy. I was just like, yep, I'm not going back to that. I'm not going back to what I was doing. This is what I'm going to do. And I actually started out with a blog because I was like, I'm going to start this up. I'm going to start sharing my experiences. And slowly, slowly, it started to evolve. And what was really good was that I never knew what the end result was going to be. It was literally this journey of just like discovery. So when I'm telling them, I think one really big thing is learning how to communicate certain things, because what I've learned and something that I teach others is, you know, like everyone has a preferred way of absorbing information. So it was really important for me to understand how everyone in my family was processing things. And for them, like for me, I understand better just by like speaking in the more auditory kind of like format, whereas for them, they needed to see things. So when I start showing them stuff, it was just making a bit more sense. But to be honest with you, I think they obviously had their opinions and they were very, very supportive, but it was more that, how to explain this? It didn't really matter to me too much anymore, which was so liberating that I was just like, yeah, you can have your opinions because everyone's going to have their perception. The perception isn't the truth always, right? But I know my truth. So I know why I'm doing this. And that for me made it so much more easier. I walked away from so many things in my life and I just had to start from scratch again, basically. But it was all about just rebuilding yourself back in the way that's right for you.
Something that people listening to this will be like, oh my God, they might be in the position where they're having them panic attacks every day or twice a day. And they're thinking, am I always going to be this way? How are you feeling now?
How am I feeling? Do you know what? I think I always just say, I just feel like I'm completely aligned. That's what I always say. That's what it is. I think I talk a lot about congruence, and I can firmly say that the way that I think, the things that I believe in, the things that I do, my actions, everything, it's all in sync. And that for me is what's so important. There's no conflict. I'm so comfortable in my own skin. I'm so confident now just to tell everyone else, because a lot of the times when I was kind of making this transition, you know, a lot of people are just like, oh, you're going from like, you know, you're working in the legal space and now doing something else. And they won't have their own comments about that. And it just doesn't get to me. And instead, I'm just so passionate and proud. I tell them, yeah, this is what I'm working on. I'd never have this notion of having to justify myself to anyone ever.
You're such a strong person. And obviously, look, I mean, anxiety can still rear its head. We still can have stress in our lives. And once you have that self-awareness, your anxiety will always come back and tell you when it needs to tell you if you're kind of pushing yourself too much. Is it something that you feel like is just in the background these days or barely even felt?
It's not there. Like, if I'm completely honest, it has gone. Like, I always get worried because, you know, you have that thing where you're just like, wait, where is it gone? Because this was part of me for so long. And you're just like, where is it? It wasn't this thing that you just wake up one day and it's gone. It is a slow, gradual process. But no, it's not there. Like, I think I've just learned. Yeah, I've not touched wood. I've not had. There were certain things that happened in my life that were very, very stressful. And whenever I felt that trickle coming back, I knew what to do. So I knew how to implement things and I knew what it was that's going to help just nip these in the bud. That's what's so powerful is, like, I always think, like, you should never think, oh my God, touch wood, it never comes back. None of that. It's more if it does come back, I'm equipped and I'm empowered and I know exactly what to do.
Yeah, and it will, because life is stressful and things happen and your body is, when it has an anxious response, it's doing its job and it's meant to. So it's not about switching off this part of your brain that is capable of feeling fear or overwhelm. You don't want that. But now, like, you have the awareness, you've been through so much, you know what works for you, what doesn't. Before I ask you about some of your more professional advice, your five pillars of your coaching, I would love to ask you how you advise, having had to navigate this for yourself, people struggling with anxiety. And I get a lot of messages saying, I understand it myself, but my parents or my boyfriend or whoever really doesn't get it and just thinks that I'm being ridiculous. How is it such an ancillary source of anxiety for people? How would someone start in trying to help someone around them understand?
Yeah, this has definitely come in with what I've learned from like the NLP side of things, which is all about understanding how someone is learning. That's what it comes down to, is everyone absorbs information in different ways. So it's all about looking at the way that they're saying, because, you know, when people are saying things like, well, I can't see what you mean, it's really the simple things. It's like, okay, this means I have to show them. So it's like with me, I'll be really honest, like, you know, because for me, I just kept on explaining, because for me, that's what made sense. My parents saw it. For them, it clicked on the day that I just, to be honest with you, I just didn't hide it anymore. So they saw that panic attack, and they saw one of the worst ones. There was one that was so bad that I woke up in my sleep and I was having one, and I literally was like, I'm gone. This is it. It's game over. And I literally was like, I'm done. And I remember saying to my mom, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to put you through all this. Tell other people, you know, and I started literally talking as if that was my last moment on this world. And that's when I think it clicked for my family. They had to see it because okay. They saw that. So I think that is what my biggest piece of advice is don't try and hide it. Just show it completely for what it is. Try and speak up about what it is that you're feeling, and try these different things. Because some people, it might be, yeah, we need to hear you really break this down and explain it for me to understand it. It might be showing it. And that's, for me, is what I've seen, is just showing it has been so much more powerful.
So you started Peace Over Panic blog. I love the name. And now yeah. You are a mindset coach working to help others, given your background, the empathy that you will have for others and the understanding is so powerful. Really quickly, I want to just go through, I want to leave the listener with, obviously you've given them so much already, such an inspiring story. Like, I am so impressed with how you've managed to really guide yourself through such a tough situation and getting to that point of just being so confident of knowing what's right for you. Like that, that's an incredible, incredible achievement to be that aligned with yourself. So you should really be, I hope you're so proud.
I am.
But you have 5 pillars to your coaching. Can we just really quickly run through them from 1 to 5 and just give it one little tip for each?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I have 5 pillars, which basically reflects my own journey. So number one is identifying the root of conflict. So everyone has this thing where they're just like, I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know where I'm feeling. Yeah, you do. It's just embedded and it's just hidden and tucked under so many different layers of just life. So that is the number one step that we need to take, is identify the root. What is it that's causing me to feel like this? Because once you identify this, it becomes something tangible and you can work with it. So that's a massive thing, because it sets you off with a really, really good place with where to work and what to focus on. The second thing is managing your anxiety symptoms using natural steps. I'm a huge, huge advocate of natural steps and just really, really small things. So like breath work, like, which for people probably hear that all the time, but it's so, so powerful. And for me, and what's really important in empowering my clients, is that no matter where you are in the world, you are not dependent on something else to make you feel better, that you are equipped with these really small exercises and techniques that can help you just really calm yourself down. And so it doesn't take over the whole entirety of your day. So that's a huge one. Number 3 is this communication mastery. So again, what we were talking about earlier, which is, how do I communicate this to those around me? Even just in your work environment, how do I vocalize this? And also for yourself, it's very important that you're aware of your self-dialogue, because that flows into so many different things. Also taking a step forward is a fulfillment analysis. That's what I was doing when I was trying to understand what is not aligned, what is not congruent, and just trying to make sure that your passions, your beliefs, your goals, and your actions are all aligned. So it's literally taking a look at every element of your life, from your relationship to your friendships, to your work, your family dynamic, your health, looking at every single thing and trying to identify what is it that needs to be worked on. And then finally, it's all about priming the mind for transformation and breaking old habits. Like I mentioned before, a lot of what we're doing is just going through the motions. It's habitual. But what this essentially is just challenging the quality of your thoughts, which is a huge thing, because we tend to just accept our thoughts for what they are. And we can't do that, right? Because we have 6,000 thoughts a day. You can't be absorbing every single thing that's coming from them. And something that I talk about a lot is perception versus reality, because obviously we all break down the world around us very differently. And what we are responding to is our own version of reality. And sometimes we need to step out of that and think, wait, am I just getting caught up in the habitual way that I've been thinking, as opposed to what is the reality of this situation? So those, just in a nutshell, are the 5 steps.
It's so helpful. I'm curious as well, before I let you go, since you've started the blog and you've been helping other people, have you connected with a lot more people from the Sikh community who experienced similar?
Yes, so that is something that I am so excited about. Ever since I have been talking about it more on Instagram, because that's kind of where I'm putting out a lot of my work, it has been amazing to see how many different men and women are both like all talking about this concept, and they're all speaking about their own experiences. So yeah, it's been amazing. Like, I connected with two other women from a South Asian background, and now we've set up our own kind of organization called Unfiltered, which is literally just having these unfiltered conversations and just opening up the table to speak up about everything. So from drug addiction, alcohol abuse, to fertility, mental health, like there's so many different things. So we've opened that up together, which I'm so excited about. And we've also been, we started up our own podcast as well, which is really, really exciting. But then there's also just been a lot of crossover, yeah, within the community. So that's been really amazing, because we are a really collaborative culture. We just haven't always been when it comes to the stuff that's a bit more sensitive. So to see that we're bridging that gap and we're all coming together and supporting each other in that has been absolutely amazing.
You're doing incredible work, and you have been on an incredible journey, and this is only the beginning. Thank you so much for your time. And let people know how to find you on Instagram.
Yeah, sure. So you can connect with me at nav_sohanpaul on Instagram. That's where you can just see a little bit more of my work. And you can also just book in, just if you want to have a little chat just about anything that you've got going on. There's also a link in my bio there. So you can just head over to nav_sohanpaul on Instagram and you'll find me there.
Amazing. And I will put that link in the episode notes so people can click right into it. Thank you so much for joining me. You are proof that vulnerability really is your greatest strength when you're willing to tap into it and lean into it. I can't wait to share this episode. I know it's going to be helpful for so many people. And yeah, well done for just being a legend.
Thank you. Honestly, thank you so much for just giving me this platform as well, just to really vocalize something like that. So, no, it's been absolutely amazing just speaking with you today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.